They are systemic. That was the confirmation issued from Baltimore's mayor when asked who is responsible for the state of that city's police department. For African Americans, the U.S. Justice Department's report into the Baltimore Police Department's failings are vindication of what they said they experience. Will laying out the truth about systemic racism, excessive use of force, and bullying of citizens by police be enough? Justice Department reforms will be slow and costly, yet we are expecting the same people who work within this system of racism to fix it. In this edition of the debate, we discuss the Department of Justice report and how it reflects on the daily reality for many African Americans and other minorities throughout the United States. Let me now introduce our guests for this debate. We're joined by columnist and political scientist Mr. Wilmer Leon, who is joining us live from Washington. And we're also joined by research associate at MIT, Mr. Jim Walsh, who is joining us live from Boston. Gentlemen, thank you both for joining us. Mr. Walsh, I'll start with you. How did you react to the Department of Justice report on Baltimore's police department?
Well, it's sad news, but I don't think it's a surprise. There's been strong circumstantial and other sorts of evidence that there are problems, particularly in the use of deadly force. And the numbers here are not very good. The data collected is very poor because it relies on police departments self-reporting to the FBI. And even the FBI says this data isn't very good. But we're starting to get better data through crowdsourcing. And it does suggest, particularly in the difference between if you are unarmed, your chances of being killed by a police officer if you're unarmed and white versus unarmed and a member of a minority group, that disparity seems quite large. Now, it's not everywhere, so we have to be careful about generalizations, but I think clearly there are significant problems in a number of different metropolitan areas, and Baltimore has come under the microscope for it and is now exposed.
Okay, and Dr. Leon, how did you react to this?
Well, this is really no surprise. What I think has to happen as a result of this Baltimore report is we really have to start having the conversation about policing from a systemic and a historic perspective. The 13th Amendment, which was ratified in 1865, abolished slavery except for punishment for a crime. From there, we went into convict leasing programs. And from there, we have, and that, of course, documented by James Blackman's very good book. From there, we get into We Charge Genocide, the book and the petition in 1951, where people took the United States before the Supreme Court, charging the Supreme Court with genocide. So the history is replete with examples of how police departments have been used for generations as occupying forces and as forces of repression. And we understand how police departments, particularly those in the South, started out as slave catching operations, and the mentality behind those operations we find still consistent today, a la Baltimore, a la Chicago, a la the New York Police Department. So this is not new.
Okay, so Mr. Walsh, as Dr. Leon there pointed out, there is a lot of history here, isn't there? And even Baltimore's mayor was quite clear, about this being a systemic issue, this racism being systemic. And of course, the mayor was talking just about Baltimore, but we do know that this is something which exists in many major cities and in many police departments throughout the United States. So what does this say about 2016? We're in a post-civil rights movement era.
Well, I think the history is important. We wouldn't want to ignore it, but we wouldn't want to make more of it than is warranted here. And what do I mean by that? I think there's a really interesting study put out by an anthropologist at the University of California, San Diego, who took essentially new data at the county level and tried to document the disparities in treatment between whites and minorities. And what he found was that this was not uniform. In other words, it's not sort of a thing that every police department everywhere is oppressing everyone because it's in the nature of policing. That's not what they found. What they found instead was that certain metropolitan areas had particularly bad problems, Even if there was another Metropolitan Police Department in a similar area with similar crime rates and other similarities who had much lower level of problems. And that what that seems to point to is that there are particular practices by particular police departments that are generating a lot of problems. Now, New York City had a search and frisk policy. That seems to have contributed to a lot of these problems. They changed that policy, and then there were, and then things got better after that. So that's the good news here. In other words, it would seem as if it's a particular set of police departments that are especially egregious and problematic that use certain practices. And if you change those practices and policies, then you can get much better outcomes. I mean, Boston had racism for years. I've lived in Boston for decades, famous for racial problems in Boston. Yet Boston, with its emphasis on community policing, has not had the problems that other cities have had with deadly force. So I think a lot of it is about recruitment, it's about training, it's about leadership, it's about really doing, as your audio clip suggested before the program, community policing is a lot more than simply having a meeting. And so I think it's really about changing policies and changing leadership. But to target those police departments that are different from the other police departments that just seem to be especially bad. So Miami-Dade County would be one, you know, from the data from 2014. There are others as well. But they're not all equally bad or all bad in the same way.
Okay, so Dr. Leon, that touches on an important point, doesn't it? Because even the U.S. Justice Department has said reforms can be carried out within the BPD. And in fact, the U.S. Justice Department officials said that though the reforms will be slow and costly, it is possible. But then it's confusing, isn't it? Because we're essentially saying that the system is racist, but then we're expecting the system to almost fix itself. Does that make sense?
Well, no, it doesn't make sense. And the problem, part of the problem is this whole idea that these things are happening in a vacuum, that it's some departments. Yes, once stop and frisk was stopped in New York, things did get better, but they didn't get better for Eric Garner. So when we look at Oakland, when we look at Los Angeles, again, you have to understand that this is a mindset. It is a system and a pattern of perception, a pattern of logic, and a pattern of action. Again, we can look at what's happened in Chicago. They've just had to pay almost $6 million to victims of the Chicago Police Department who for decades were being kidnapped and brutalized by the Chicago Police Department. We have the situation of Holman Square in Chicago, where individuals were snatched off the street and brutalized by the Chicago Police Department. If we continue to try to look at these issues as though they happen in a vacuum, as we try to look at these situations as one-offs, we will continue to have these problems because we will not address the fundamental problem with police departments in this country, and that is they are operating from a racist, systemic mindset that has very little to do with individual officers as good cops, bad cops. And I mean, look at what the Baltimore report said. Investigators found supervisors have issued explicitly discriminatory orders such as arresting all black people wearing hoodies. This is happening across police departments across the United States because America is fundamentally still a racist country.
Okay, so Mr. Walsh, that gets to the heart of the issue then, doesn't it? Because there were many articles today that I read, and a lot of the African-American organizations throughout the United States have said this as well, that unless the systemic nature of the problem is not tackled head-on, nothing will really be fixed. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I think people are getting confused about this, right? Departments can have systemic issues, but I think it's really bad causal thinking to think, well, it's all racism, and because if that's your point of view, that it's just racism and racism is everywhere, then that doesn't explain why there are differences between departments, and it doesn't offer very many policy options, because what do? You're going to wave a wand and make everyone not racist? I mean, there are lots of ways that we've been able to make progress and equality without and we haven't been able to eliminate every bigot in the world. I think these generalizations are not very helpful from a policy standpoint. And we can all name examples and lots of examples of individual acts of police brutality. But that's why actually research matters, right? So that we can identify the police departments that are the worst bad, for that matter, and compare them to the ones that are not bad, because there are police departments that don't have these problems, despite the fact that we have bigotry in the U.S. These police departments don't have those problems. So why is that? That would point to recruitment. I mean, the police mayor of Richmond points out that in recruitment for many police departments, they emphasize use of guns and exciting lifestyle and banging down doors. And in the Richmond Police Department, what they emphasize is getting to know the community and working with a community partnership. So you are attracting, self-selection bias, attracting a different sort of person who is an officer in the Richmond Police Department than they are in some of these other departments. And the focus on militarizing the police and a search and frisk and on and on. So I think there are a number of specific policy changes. You don't have to be perfect. We don't have to live in, a perfect world in order to have police departments that don't kill innocent people. So I think, let's focus. It's a problem. I'm not disagreeing with any of this. What I'm saying is let's get some real research on the nature of the problem and then attack it very specifically rather than making broad generalizations that aren't going to get us anywhere.
Dr. Leon, how do you feel about that? Because certainly, I'm sure Mr. Walsh has a point. I'm sure there are police departments and police chiefs and policemen throughout the country who do not hold racist bias, towards anybody and are only doing their job. So how do we then, as he said, do we just talk about then specific police departments such as Baltimore, for example?
Well, no, we are not that far apart. I don't think that we're that far apart on the issue because I'm not saying that racism is the only problem. What I am saying is that in all too many instances, when we start to have these conversations, the fact that there has been a historic pattern of racism deals with, or as we look at the history of police departments in this country, as we look at the history of policing in African-American communities, we're not hearing that level of dialogue. So even after you collect all the data that you want to collect, if you fail to ignore the historic elements of policing in black communities, you still won't be able to come up with a proper identification of your problem. You still won't be able to come out with the proper types of policies that are needed, because you will fail to look at one of the biggest elements that has to do with policing in black communities in this country, and that is historically, it has been used for oppressive purposes. It has not been used to protect and serve.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Okay, so Mr. Walsh, I want to throw this in here as well, and of course I want to get your reaction to what Dr. Leon said, but also wanted to ask you that, with the support for the likes of Donald Trump, for example, within the country, and his support base being as large as it is at this point, it certainly is worrying, isn't it? Because a lot of right-wing media that I read today, articles in a lot of those right-wing sites, they were very supportive of the police point blank, as in it was across the board. And they blamed essentially the victims in this case, which be it the African Americans or other minorities, such as that Latin teen, the Hispanic teen, who has been killed in Los Angeles, 14-year-old. So I'm wondering, is that not a dangerous sign then for going ahead to be able to solve this issue, to be able to have that honest conversation, as Dr. Leon said, about how policing is done differently for different communities?
Well, I think this is policing has always been a polarizing partisan issue, or it was for decades. You'll remember Nixon and Agnew and Law and Order as an issue. But I don't know if we could take one segment of Donald Trump's support and then generalize off of that and say this is what half of America thinks. I think that would be a dangerous and actually erroneous generalization to make. I don't know what the current poll numbers are about how Americans feel, but basically there's this sort of middle position that people are trying to espouse, which is they oppose use of force and police brutality and racially biased policing, and they don't want people to shoot police officers. So it seems to me there's plenty of room, you know, for people to endorse both ideas. The bottom line, and I think Black Lives Matter spokespeople have done a brilliant job of articulating this, and their position is no one should be being killed, right? The unarmed, or even for that matter the armed, but certainly the unarmed suspects shouldn't be killed, and the police officers shouldn't be shot or assassinated. You know, and so I think if we ever, and I think that's probably a proposition that has widespread support in the country. So, you know, if you only focused on Donald Trump's extremist supporters, white nationalists among them, you could really scare yourself maybe a lot more than is warranted. I think people want to live in safe cities. They want their police to do their job and not discriminate, and they don't want to have violence, whether it's against police officers or against alleged perpetrators. I think most Americans would sign on to that.
Okay, so Dr. Leon, how do you feel about the Trump versus Clinton? Because I know Hillary Clinton spoke and you know during the convention said she would stand for minority rights. She would speak up against you know the racial bias that does exist towards African American communities within police departments. But at the same time, I'm wondering, you know, with African Americans and other minorities now entirely mistrusting, they do not trust the justice system, because we haven't seen justice really play out in most of these cases that have occurred over the past couple of years we've been reporting. You know, how exactly can we move past that obstacle of there's simply no trust here?
Well, again, because too many instances people are failing to understand and appreciate the historic nature of the problem. And what we find in this dialogue about police being shot versus unarmed or lawfully armed African Americans being executed by police officers is as though this has to be some type of binary conversation. So what you have is people such like Rudy Giuliani coming out and intentionally misrepresenting the conversation and the position of Black Lives Matter as somehow for the Black Lives Matter movement or other members of the African American community to be pro African American and pro lives of African Americans somehow gets made into this false narrative of being anti-police. And that has absolutely nothing to do with the conversation. People who support Black Lives Matter and people who are advocating that African Americans should be fairly treated are not anti-police. They're anti-bad police. They're anti-Tamir Rice being shot. They're anti-Philando Castillo being shot. They're anti-Eric Garner being choked to death by Staten Island police using an admittedly outlawed tactic of a chokehold. So somehow, when members of the African-American community want to advocate for the lives of African Americans, that somehow gets twisted and misinterpreted as being anti-police, and nothing could be further from the truth. We are anti-bad policing, and there is a long historic record, as I started with the 13th Amendment, there is a long historic record in this country of how police have been used in Black communities as occupying forces instead of being there to protect and serve.
Okay, so Mr. Walsh, we just have under a minute left, so I wanted to get the final comments from you. How do you feel about that factor? Certainly, at some point, and maybe we're already past that point, these minorities do not trust the justice system. That's certainly quite dangerous for the United States, isn't it?
Well, I think it's a terrible thing, and it's not true in all communities. So the communities where it's not true, we need to take those practices and have those practices observed by the other police departments where there are problems. I mean, this is an old problem, as my colleague has pointed out, but I'm rather optimistic about its future. I think we're going to get better data, and that's going to help us sort of pinpoint and go after the really, really bad departments, which have to be the priority, and then they'll tell us why departments that do well are successful, and we can imitate those practices. I think it'll be interesting to see how body cameras and increasing availability of cell phone cameras will change things. I think there are a lot of things, and we're going to have better data, as I said. So I think there are a lot of practices in the future that would suggest that we can get a lot better.
Okay, I do apologize for interrupting, Mr. Walsh. I do sincerely apologize. We have 30 seconds left. I just want to get final comments from Dr. Leon. Dr. Leon, is there light at the end of the tunnel?
Sure.
There is light at the end of the tunnel. Unfortunately, right now, it looks like it's coming from an oncoming train. Data is very, very important, but data always must be viewed. I mean, I'm a social scientist as well. Data must always be viewed in a context. And when you ignore the historical context, the data can be, not always, but can be meaningless.
Very well. We'll leave it there at that, gentlemen. But of course, we do appreciate both your contributions to this debate. That was columnist and political scientist Dr. Wilma Leon, who had been speaking to us live from Washington. And we were also joined by a research associate at MIT, Mr. Jim Walsh, who had been speaking to us live from Boston. And of course, viewers, we appreciate you joining us as well. Until next time, good night.